Okay, we will resume for the second half of day four.
The
Can you
postcard?
a postcard? Yes, that's what's
You'll like this
next.
one. Okay, let me. Oh, sharing is not turned on, so
Are you a co-host?
I believe that Sue made me a co-host,
Let's
but
make sure. No, you are not a co-host.
you're not right now, but you were, so I don't know what happened. I will make you co-host right now.
Okay, I'm now a co-host, so I can now share. So this is good. I just have to share the sound so that I can make sure that you all can hear it. All right. Now we will hear another postcard.
The Netherlands Carillon, a gift of freedom and friendship. Even those who have never visited Washington, D.C., have no doubt heard of such historic sites as the White House, the Capitol, and the Lincoln Memorial. But have you heard of the Netherlands Carillon? Most people who have lived in the area for decades have not. Standing on a hill in Arlington, Virginia, overlooking the Potomac River and the monuments of Washington, D.C., the Netherlands Carillon is both a musical instrument and a symbol of international friendship. For more than 60 years, its bells have reminded visitors of the close relationship between the United States and the Netherlands, and of the shared sacrifices made during World War II. The story begins in the years following the war. The Netherlands had endured 5 years of Nazi occupation before being liberated in 1945. With significant assistance from Allied forces, including the United States. In gratitude for America's role in restoring Dutch freedom and supporting post-war reconstruction, the people of the Netherlands decided to present a lasting gift to the American people. The gift took the form of a carillon, a musical instrument consisting of bells played from a keyboard. The first 49 bells arrived in the United States in 1954. They were initially displayed in Washington, but plans soon moved forward for a permanent home across the Potomac River in Arlington. A striking modern steel tower designed by Dutch architect Joost Boeks was completed in 1960. On May 5 of that year, the 15th anniversary of the liberation of the Netherlands Carillon was officially dedicated. The tower itself stands about 127 feet tall. At its base are bronze lions representing the Dutch royal family, while nearby gardens are planted each spring with thousands of tulips, another gift associated with the Netherlands. From the grounds, visitors enjoy one of the finest panoramic views of Washington, including the Lincoln Memorial, Washington Monument, and the U.S. Capitol. Over the decades, the Carillon has required several major restorations. By the early 21st century, weather and corrosion had taken a serious toll on the structure. A comprehensive rehabilitation project began in 2019. After 2 years of work, the restored Carillon was rededicated on May 5, 2022. As part of the project, three new bells were added, bringing the total to 53 and elevating the instrument to the status of a grand Carillon. These bells honor General George C. Marshall, Eleanor Roosevelt, and Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Today, the Netherlands Carillon remains an active memorial. Automated chimes sound throughout the day, and guest Caroloners present concerts during the summer months. Special events, including annual freedom concerts, continue to celebrate the values of liberty, democracy, and international cooperation. More than a collection of bells, the Netherlands Carillon stands as a living reminder that freedom is precious, friendship among nations matters, and gratitude can resonate across generations. Thank you, Jen. Okay. Now we're moving. Anyone have any other comments or anything before we move on to the second half's agenda?
I just want to make sure that the screen share ended so that you don't hear my system.
I don't hear your system.
You don't. Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right, Stuart.
Thank you, Judy. It's almost 11 p.m. here, and I feel very zen and chilled after listening to that wonderful audio podcast. So thank you, Jen. Could listen to those bells all night. It's very, very nice. So, thank you very much. And hello again, everybody. I'm Stuart Lawler, and this time I'm wearing my hat as the PRO at ISEB. And I think in the next hour or so, I want to start by presenting the Public Relations Committee report for the midterm meeting, and then talk a little bit broader about just promotion of Braille and what ISEB's role is in that, and how we sort of promote the work of what we're doing here and all the great things that have been talked about over the last couple of days. So I hope we'll find that next hour or so to be useful. So just to start off, the report from the PR committee is in your pack, so everybody can read it in your own time, but I'll go through some of the highlights. The members of the Public Relations Committee, in no particular order, are Leona Holloway from Australia, Sue Riley from United States, Kim Kilpatrick from Canada, Chantel Griffiths from New Zealand, Pasha Alden from South Africa, and Dave Williams from the UK, and of course myself as chair from Ireland. And I think one or two of the PR committee may be here and may have been promoted already.
They're here, but they declined promotion.
They declined. Okay. That's all right. That's okay. The Public Relations Committee, I suppose over the last 2 years, we could summarize, we had two priorities. The first was to improve communications, and the second was to increase the awareness of ICEB's work. When I took on this post just after the General Assembly in 2024, I met with Judy, and straight away we started talking about the ICEB website. Judy has spent a long, long time managing that website by hand and has done an unbelievable job of keeping it all going. And I just want to put that on the record and thank her for the many years of work she has put into it. One of the things we wanted to do was move the website to a more sustainable and flexible platform to allow individual members who have responsibility for various committees or departments within ICEB to be able to create their own content. So we set about a project to develop a new website for ICEB. We contracted a company called Techopolis. It did take a little longer than we all would have liked, and I want to acknowledge the support of many of my fellow exec committee members, including Frances Mary D'Andrea, Judy Dixon, Jen Golden, James Bowden, and by no means least Matthew Horspool, who put a huge amount of work into the website and continues to do so. So Matthew, thank you, because that is really, really valued and appreciated. If you were here on Sunday, you may realize that there were some challenges with our website. We're back up and running, and you can have a look. Anyone who hasn't had a look at iceb.org website is definitely a work in progress. The ICEB newsletter has been the most important communications channel for the organization, and I want to give very special thanks to Jen Golden for her editorship and leadership in that regard, and to Jodie Doolan for her work on formatting the newsletter and making sure that everything is visually appealing. We're very keen to encourage member countries to continue submitting news and information and updates from your country or anything interesting that's going on in the world of Braille. Please do get in touch with Jen or any of the committee. One of the initiatives that we have launched since 2024 is the ICEB Town Hall series. And I suppose what struck me about ICEB, and not just since I took over, but maybe a little bit earlier as well, is that there's great stuff going on, but nobody really knew about it outside of ICEB unless they got the newsletter or unless they took the trouble to go to the website. And I think since COVID, everybody, if you're not webinared out at this stage, you probably feel there is some value in participating in webinars, and it's an easy way to consume content. So we started our webinar series. We've had three to date, one on the ICEB rulebook, one on IPA Braille with Dr. Robert Ingelbretson and Sherry Gomez, and most lately the Grade 1 indicator with James Bowden, Clive Lansing, and Jodie Doolan. And these have been really well attended. We've had, on average, about 150 registrations, slightly less people attending on the night, but that's to be expected. And these town halls are all now available on our podcast, thanks to Matthew for his help with that as well. I'm very grateful to all the presenters who shared their information and gave up their time to do that. So, looking ahead to the next 2 years, we continue to develop the Town Hall series. And one of the next big tasks for the ICEB Public Relations Committee is to develop a social media strategy. We are on social media, we're on various different platforms that Jen could probably talk a lot better than I could about, but we don't really have a consistent strategy, and we're not really sure, I suppose, what we want to get from social media. So we do need to think a little bit about that and where social media fits in ICEB's messaging. So with that in mind, I've reached out to somebody from RNIB, Holly Took, who's a social media manager, thanks to James, who helped us make that link. And Holly is going to come to meet the Public Relations Committee and give us a little bit of an update. In conclusion, I want to once again thank the Public Relations Committee and thank my colleagues on the Executive Committee for their support. I look forward very much to continuing our collaborations and working together over the next 2 years. And before we start our discussion, I suppose I'm very happy to take any questions if people have any specific questions on the report itself. Thank you.
Doesn't sound like it.
Okay.
So
All right.
let's move. You can move on.
Okay. Okay. So I thought we should. I was thinking about how to do this and what's the best way to do this. And even since the session started earlier this evening, some stuff has popped into my head around. I think one or two questions about just what is the role of ICEB's public relations function? What sort of things should we be talking about? But also to Matthew's point earlier about kind of an authority within a local country maybe talking more to users, is that the role of ICEB, or is it the role of, a Braille authority locally to do that? So who are we talking to, and what are we talking about? And just to maybe put a bit of context into the discussion, and to maybe help us think about this, and then I have a question I might throw out to everybody. I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago, and I won't say in what country the person was because that's not fair, but I had a conversation with somebody who is very involved in providing certified Braille teaching to teachers, to teachers of the visually impaired, or QTVIs, or call them whatever you wish in your country. And I just happened to mention to her that these sessions were coming up on the week of the 9th of August, and I was saying something about ICEB, and she said, and bear in mind this person is very experienced and has been doing this for a long time, and she said, "I think I've heard of them." And I was kind of aghast at that, because how do how who do who thinks, or how do we, I suppose, how are the people who are teaching Braille to teachers, are they aware of who's making the rules? All this great work that we've been talking about over the last couple of nights, with Matthew and his committee, and Clive and James, and all the work that has been going on here in the background. I'm not sure that people are aware of what's being done and who's doing them, and maybe more importantly, how they can feedback and get in touch. So is that something we need to think about? But the question I thought we'd do, and maybe to throw it out, and anyone who wants can answer this, but it'd be interesting to hear feedback from each country. So since 2024, what is the single most successful initiative that has helped to promote Braille or increase awareness of Braille in your country? And it may, I know we've had the reports earlier on, and there's been some really interesting things that have come out of that. So some of this may have been said already, but equally, it may be something that maybe you weren't involved in, but that you are aware of, that you want to highlight. And I'm just wondering, is that a good place to start, just to share some experiences on Braille promotion locally in your country? And then maybe we can talk a bit about more broadly where that fits into ICEB. So I don't know if anybody would like to start. It's always hard to be first. If not, I'll just, to be fair, I'll throw one out from Ireland. We have our World Book Day here every year on the, I think it's around the 5th of March, and the chosen book for World Book Day here is always by an Irish author. And that book, since 2024 was the first year, is now available in Braille on World Book Day itself, so that people get the print copy and the Braille copy at the same time. That wasn't the case for many, many years before that. The Braille copy was available, but it was several months later. And that's been kind of good, because a lot of adults who have been maybe learning Braille for a while, and maybe are interested in reading, have something current to read, and something maybe that their sighted friends or family members are reading at the same time.
We have two raised hands, Frances
Matthew
Mary
and,
and then
yeah.
Matthew.
Okay. Hi, FM.
Hello. I think in the United States, again, and my perspective would be more towards the K-12, kindergarten through 12th grade, rather than adult Braille readers. But I think our teachers hear a lot about the Braille Challenge through the Braille Institute, and I've seen growing numbers of teachers and their students participating on individual, regional, state, and national level. So I know here in Pennsylvania there are now at least two a group sessions for doing that because the state's kind of long, so it'd be a 5-hour drive to get to from one end to the other. So that's something that I think has really helped promote Braille. Callie, I don't know if you have other. There have been a few, as far as my university kind of thing. There have been a few projects that had received some grant funding that had gotten some excitement around Braille. And in fact, Callie was involved in one of them. So I think that's something else. As far as adult Braille readers, I don't know, maybe Judy, you might actually know more than I do because I think there have been some interesting things going on with the National Library Service and other things. But when I think of the things that kind of the general public has heard about, those are probably the ones that come to my mind.
The National Library Service continues its e-reader distribution. It's the number of e-readers now is last I heard it was over 15,000. So it's a lot of e-readers, and also our Braille on Demand, so or their Braille on Demand. These are things that have been going on for several years, but they continue and they're funded, and that's the good thing.
I think Matthew had his hand up as well.
Yeah, hiya. I can't remember the exact scope of the question, but thinking about recent things and promotion of Braille, I think the thing that first came to mind when you asked the question was the Braille 200 campaign, which in the UK we took very seriously. I don't think I saw Dave in the audience, but Dave Williams was very key to that campaign, both in an RNIB capacity and in a Braillist capacity. We put on a conference. RNIB went around a lot of different libraries, officially went around to 12 libraries, but unofficially went around to a lot more and did Braille awareness days in public libraries. It got quite a lot of media attention. There's a BBC, I think it's a BBC program. It's called Inside the Factory. And there was a recording of an Inside the Factory program about Braille, which I wasn't involved in, and I can't remember the details of, but I remember it happened. There's also another BBC program called Bargain Hunt. There was a Bargain Hunt has a little bit of a joke feature in the middle where they say, "Oh, what?" They'll pick a random object, a mystery object, and they'll ask people to try and identify it. And one of the mystery objects on Bargain Hunt was a Braille slate and stylus or a hand frame. I was actually put forward to be the expert on that program. So I got to go on national television and talk about the hand frame with support from James Bowden, who actually provided some of the equipment that we demonstrated. So certainly for the UK, this was a really big opportunity to promote Braille. I'm not sure that it had a particularly lasting legacy. I don't know that we're seeing much more Braille come through as a consequence of Braille 200, but certainly in terms of raising awareness, that was a very big deal for us.
Yeah, thanks, Matthew. And I remember that this, and particularly the start of the Braille 200 campaign, around the time that the Braillists Foundation had your in-person conference, and actually the organisation where I work at Sight and Sound, we actually did a bit of work on that as well at the start of the year and with BBC. So, and I know Dave Williams, who you mentioned, was very heavily involved in that too. I think there was a few other hands.
Leona was an attendee. I promoted her as part of the public relations committee, and she has her hand raised.
Hey, Leona.
Good morning. Sorry, I missed that earlier call because I was feeding my ducks in the morning. Just from Australia, a lot of the activities that we've been talking about, we do here as well. So we've started joining in the Braille Challenge. We have a national simultaneous story time, and we have been producing Braille copies of that. And recently, Vision Australia have also begun making instructions on how people can create their own Braille and tactile books that can be used alongside when all kids in Australia read the same book together. But probably the one that's unique is the Braille bombing events. We've had a few of those where we go out and stick Braille labels all over the town. And that tends to raise awareness locally, but also get the attention of news.
Thanks, Leona.
And James Bowden.
Hey, James.
Thank you. Yes, there was more media coverage that Matthew's mentioned as well. There were appearances on breakfast television. There was even a program on national radio about Braille music. So the Braille 200 was pretty big. The other thing I was going to mention, apart from the continuing work the Braillists do, is which is incredible. It's got a great reputation, not just in the UK but worldwide. It's also the curriculum framework for people with vision impairment, which I mentioned earlier. Braille is an essential skill, and therefore, I understand there has been an increase in teaching Braille to children. I understand. I don't have any stats to back that up, but I believe that's true.
Thank you, James. Have we any
I'm
more
not
hands here?
sure, Matthew and Leona, have you raised your hands again?
Oh, it might have been up already.
Matthew, do you have your hand raised? Okay.
Sorry, sometimes it lowers your hand automatically and sometimes it doesn't. So I assumed it had lowered it, but it hadn't. Sorry about that. I'm here
Okay.
now.
I don't see any other hands raised then.
Okay. So thank you for all the really interesting, and actually just I think it was FM mentioned the Braille Challenge that we had this year in Ireland. We had our first participant travel to the finals in Los Angeles, and it was a huge thing here all over social media, and a lot of the blindness agencies and were picking up on it, and it was brilliant. So
That's
it's nice to
great.
see that get a bit of promotion. I think she was, and I think she did quite well, so it was great.
Jen has her hand raised now.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Stuart. I'm sorry, I was eating dinner and then realized my cursor was in the wrong window, frantically
That's
trying to
allowed.
raise my
That's
hand.
allowed.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I agree that Braille 200 was a great opportunity. We had some radio shows in particular that contacted Braille Literacy Canada and wanted to have somebody come and talk about Braille and different things. So, some exposure. I mostly did the French ones. I think that, and I don't know if this is going to come up or whatever, but I think at least in Canada, our big challenge is that we're pretty good at promoting Braille to the people who already think Braille's pretty awesome. It's a lot harder to do like the general like awareness of the general public and promoting it with people who don't already know how like essential and awesome it is, but who maybe do have some, like school board officials, for example, that TVIs generally, yeah, they know that Braille's important. But so I think that's when we're talking about advocacy, like to me, that's a big challenge of it. Oh, I'm lowering my hand.
Thanks, Jen. I just and
Okay.
as you're as you're saying that, Jen, it's kind of making me think that we should, like, the town hall events we've had has been the registrations and even the attendance has been very high. The first time we did it, Judy had to up her Zoom limit because we got so many people
Yeah.
registering. And it would maybe be
Which is
interesting at
great.
some point. Yeah, but it would be maybe interesting to sort of. Maybe we should almost try to survey, to try to find out what people, because there was clearly an appetite for all of the things we wanted to communicate over the last year and a half, and which is kind of leading me to my second question, which is just sort of what people think the priorities should be for ICEB in terms of promotion of maybe not just Braille, but of our work and of what we do, and who our audience is in that over the next 2 and I guess more years, and where people might think that's going. I mean, are we on the right track? Those obviously our town hall events are one thing, but what else should we be doing? I mean, we could very easily get caught up in, Braille advocacy. I'm not sure that's what ICEB needs to do because there's probably other people doing that on a local or on a national level. So that kind of brings me on to my second question, is what do people feel the priorities should be, and What are we not doing that maybe we could be doing, that we can kind of bring this back to the executive over the next couple of months and make some decisions in conjunction with the public relations and other committees, I think, because we're trying to promote not just ICEB, but the work of all these subcommittees that we've been hearing about over the last couple of days.
Stuart, we do have two hands raised from the previous question and then one new one.
Okay. Do you want to take the previous ones first and then we can,
Okay, Frances
yeah.
Mary and then Debbie.
Yeah, this is FM. So, although I think there's some overlap between between the first question and the second, I was going to remark that just before this meeting started, I received an email from a colleague who said, can you send me some resources that I can share with someone who wants to know whether, children should still be using Braille? Is Braille still viable? And so I sent off like four or five things, but my point is, especially in the United States, with education being spread through the country in a it varies from state to state how services are delivered. And even though we have, a federal law for children who are receiving special services, there are places where people misconception that Braille's outmoded to promote Braille as a modern technology. That's how I've started talking about it all the time now, is Braille is a modern technology. And in the same way that print is still something that everybody uses. So I think there are still pockets of places, at least in this country, where education's not centralized, that there's still this issue of, oh yeah, I don't know if anybody uses that anymore because now we have all this technology, and you'd think that maybe they wouldn't do it anymore. And I think also in the United States, we're really only 10 years into using UEB, and that sounds like a long time, and in some ways it is, especially for newer teachers or new people who are being exposed to Braille. But for people who have been around for a while, I think they're always looking to their country Braille authority rather than looking to ICEB. I think there's still some I don't know, confusion, Jen, or what you would call it, as far as how BANA and ICEB kind of work together, or.
Yes, confusion. It's even worse in Canada because there's BLC, people know about BANA, ICEB, so I find myself explaining that a lot, the relationship.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know in Ireland, like I suppose I'm not sure everybody on INBAF could probably clearly describe the relationship between INBAF and ICEB either. So, maybe that's that's another issue. How are the Braille authorities informing people about the work they do and then the kind of overarching work that ICEB does? And do those conversations happen much, or does that come up much in maybe conversations you're having or presentations or how that's communicated? Sorry, Sue, there was probably other hands.
Yes, Debbie Gillespie and then James Bowden.
Thanks, Sue, and thanks for the question, Stuart. I think that ICEB should continue with the town halls and do them maybe every couple of months or so. I know it's difficult, but they're so well attended. And it might be a converse way to think, but a lot of the countries, Jen's right, in Canada, we're so large a country, and yet everybody who's involved in Braille knows about, Braille Literacy Canada, and it's becoming more so. But one of the reasons these things work is because of the workshops and like the Braille Literacy Canada have a thing in June, and now I forget the name of it,
The
but it's,
symposium.
thank you, the symposium. And it's well attended, and it's well attended not only in Canada. I think ICEB should do more town halls, on different topics as they do. But I think one of the things, one of the first ones you should do is explain the structure of ICEB and how each country fits, because people don't really understand the relationship between your country and ICEB, and you know, your country being where you personally live and your local Braille authority and ICEB. And I think, you know, it doesn't have to be a whole town hall session, but it should be something that people can get their heads around, and how to become involved in while ICEB would do this, they would tell you about your local Braille authority and tell you how to get involved in it. You know, because if you want to be part of ICEB, you need to be part of your local Braille authority. And I'm not sure that that relationship has been understood.
Yeah, interesting. I wonder if we put out a town hall to introduce ICEB, what kind of reaction we get versus a town hall about the rule book or the grade one indicators or IPA, which had very high levels of attendance. Maybe we'd get the same. I don't know. It's a very
we'd have to come up with a catchy title.
I think so. Yeah.
Like, I'm not being fit. We really would. I think
no,
it's a great idea.
You're right. Yeah. It needs to captivate or get people interested to attend.
Yeah.
But we come with the catchy title.
But it is a good idea.
Either yeah. The member, you know. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's a very good idea. I mean, and maybe it's in some ways maybe it should have been the first town hall we did.
James, and then Debbie, I think you put your hand up again.
Thank you. I was going to say it came out of earlier discussions when we were talking about research. Let's get some great information about Braille onto the ICEB website, success stories, success models. One of the things I say about the inclusion model of education, and I don't want to be political or contentious, but one of my own personal opinions is one of the big problems is lack of role models. If you've just got one blind child in a school, you've got no reference against which to measure their progress. Is it good that, you know, 9-year-old Johnny can read 3 words a minute? Is that normal for Braille? You don't know unless you've got role models. I've got stories, and I'm sure everybody else has, where a teacher has come up after a presentation, not a teacher, and said to the presenter, "You were reading Braille really fast, weren't you?" And the answer is, "No, I was reading it at my normal speed." Can't you do that? So I think putting some great information about Braille onto the website, success stories, things that you can do. Absolutely, it's a modern technology. There's a lot of misconceptions that it's ancient, dusty, brown pages, you know, with covers falling off and a shabby blind person with a grey white cane because it's so old, etc., etc. We need to bring that image out.
Shabby. None of us are shabby.
Right? Shabby. Don't forget bulky. Don't forget that the books are bulky, James. Yeah.
James had been speaking, we do have, because James and I have been talking, well, very casually, I suppose, James, we haven't really firmed anything up, but we did talk about having some more town hall, and we'll definitely look at one on music and Braille music, so that might be the next one. Not to throw you under the bus, James.
I finished the sonata now.
Oh, good, good. Well, there you go. We'll have it performed.
Now I've got to do is learn how to play it.
We don't expect you to do that at the webinar, don't worry. I thought Matthew's hand.
I think he's gone.
I think might have kicked him out or something.
He was in here twice.
I was switching devices. Sorry about that.
Did you have a comment, Matthew?
Well, I did. I thought we were going to come to Debbie first, but I did have a comment. So I've now forgotten what the comment was could you go to Debbie first and then
sorry,
come back
Debbie.
to me? Sorry.
Debbie took her hand down, but do you have something, Debbie?
No, that was a legacy hand.
Okay,
no problem.
Oh, I've remembered what the comment was. Sorry, it was going back to. I think there's some really good things here. I was going to mention role models in a slightly different way. To James's point, I think one of the things that we have to be very careful about. I think FM makes a really good point about needing to make the case for Braille. I think we have to be very careful about how we do that. I acknowledge that we need to do it. I've seen far too many instances, though, of people making the case for Braille to such an extent that when you read the case for Braille, even as somebody who is very passionate about Braille, I read their case for Braille and I think, gosh, you're trying to protect something that's dying out, aren't you? When people start to get the feeling that you're protecting something that's dying out, the next question is, well, why is it dying out? And maybe they're just a few that are clinging on to a notion that's a bit out of date. So we need to be really careful. And one of the things that we try to do at the Braillists actually is not to make the case for Braille. What we try and do instead is actually just talk about how Braille is useful and let the case be made by itself. And I'm not saying that that would suit every organization. I think we do need to put, you know, a case for Braille together. But yeah, just be really careful about messaging and that it doesn't sound like we're the minority trying to sound like we're not. The point about role models kind of gets into that because we obviously try and role model using Braille in our own lives. A very small example of that, Coventry Cathedral had a TV broadcast on Christmas Day a few years ago, and I made sure I read Braille during that TV broadcast to make sure that people on the TV saw. And people did, you know, people commented and said, what's this choir person doing? He's not reading the music like everybody else. And it did stimulate some discussion and so that sort of thing. Again, sorry, I've lost my train of thought. There was something else and I've forgotten. It was about Debbie's point about whether or not ICEB should run a town hall about what ICEB is. And I think that's a really interesting thing as well. I think it's probably is something that we should do. I also think that we should really encourage the Braille authorities to help us with that. I think if people already know who ICEB is, then they probably already know what ICEB does. And the people we need to reach with a town hall like that are actually people who don't know what ICEB is already. So if we do a town hall about that, how are we going to reach the people who need to hear it? And I almost wonder whether this is probably an exercise that we need to work really closely with the Braille authorities on and ask the Braille authority to do some of that messaging for us.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in the case of Ireland, our Braille authority is still trying to, I suppose, explain who we are. To some people, but I think it does make sense to get that local links and encourage people and hopefully spread the word. I think Mary had her hand up a minute ago.
She does, and then Jen.
And Jen, okay.
Yes, just quickly, I'm fascinated by this morning's conversation. When I used to be the moderator for the nominations committee, I was staggered as I contacted different Braille authorities, how hard they were to contact, because you sometimes have to fill in some stupid form instead of a nice email that you can send them, or how much or how little they actually knew and how unresponsive they were. Now, I think that, to be fair, Zoom has made a huge difference, but I really think that there's that ICEB needs to work harder somehow to explain to the Braille authorities about how we can tell our funders that print, the flat hieroglyphs, keep getting new symbols, are changing every day. And if we want our kids to keep up, we have to keep responding to that. And that's in the education field. But in addition to that, how many of us actually stick Braille labels on spices and things rather than grab an iPhone and spend 10 minutes figuring out, is this the one I actually want? There are very practical day-to-day things that I don't know if we locally or even internationally, but certainly locally, yeah, thank you for putting it down. How many really elementary uses of Braille we promote. And it's all the thing about playing games with family and children and grandchildren and goodness knows what all else. You know all of those things. But it I think Matthew, you're right. Just talk about the examples and let Braille sell itself in the way that print does. The day the sighted world stops teaching print to sighted kids is the day Braille will end. Until that day, we have to keep protecting it, and also for adults, you're losing your sight, but you can use Braille to do these things. That's me.
Thank you, Mary. And I do like the idea of let Braille tell its story and just talk about how Braille empowers or and how people use Braille. And maybe the Braille authorities, well, actually, definitely the Braille authorities have a role to play there in helping to drive that message with ICB. I think, was it Jen and someone else had a hand, I
Again, and
think?
then
Yeah.
Frances Mary.
Okay.
So I just wanted to say two quick things. One, I think in recent years, Canada has started to do a really good job of helping people to be more aware of ICEB. We've done a couple of workshops on sort of Braille on the international stage, and we have a newsletter where I, as the ICEB rep, get, well, I'm now editing the newsletter, so I could probably do this anyway, but where we, one of the kind of standing items in the newsletter is an ICEB update. We've been able to do a number of things like that. I know I'm not really supposed to be speaking on behalf of BANA, but BANA does have a podcast, and we could do something on ICEB, and so there are things that we could do. I also, my last thing is that I think for us as country reps, we need to be the liaison. So like, Mary, I would hope that if you had a difficult time contacting my Braille authority, that you'd come to me because you know me and you say, hey, listen, I've been trying to get in touch with someone from Braille Literacy Canada and, haven't been able to do that, and that I would be aware, or I can help my Braille authority promote ICEB, and I can communicate to ICEB things about my Braille authority. Like, I think it's that's part of our I see that as part of our role as country reps. Thanks.
Thanks, Jen and FM, I think.
Yeah, so I think part of the issue is people have an idea of what ICEB is, that we're what we aren't. So, and I see this with BANA also. We don't produce, for example, instructional materials, although we have a place on our on the ITEB website that has a list of things. We don't actually teach. We have a list.
FM, you're
So
breaking up.
it.
Oh, I thought it was
I
me.
have a. Sorry, there's a thunderstorm going on. So if I disappear entirely, you'll know why.
You're welcome. It was here earlier.
Yeah. So I think it can be hard to explain actually what ICEB is. And something that I know, Judy, you've been thinking about a lot is, is ICEB an advocacy group or not? And what would that mean? And what do we mean by advocacy? We certainly promote Braille, and we have this public relations committee to promote Braille and to support the Braille authorities in different countries, but how much more do we, where's the line between promotion and advocacy? Do we also have position papers? Do we also need to I don't know. So I think that's something else that maybe the PR committee could be thinking about is that line between supporting Braille instruction, Braille learning, Braille production, Braille reading, and also, not getting into, I don't know, political issues in every country or whatever else. So I think it's kind of a fuzzy line.
I just want to, just before that we go to more raised hands and FM, thank you. I just want to mention, because it's kind of connected to this conversation. I approached Judy about, it must be a year and a half ago now, and the executive committee with an idea to kind of pull together the Braille authorities, representatives from each Braille authority, just to have a, I suppose I was thinking of it as a peer support group, but it could be a really good way to sort of learn from each other, but also for Braille authorities to understand centrally what's going on with ICEB and that cross-pollinization, if you like, of various different information. And I throw my hands up here because I never did it, and I really want to do it. And Jen, I feel I need to ask you to give me a to-do and to hold me to account if I don't do it. But I want
All
to do it
right.
this year. I think we need to do that because I contacted every Braille authority, and without fail, everyone came back and said yes. Like, let's do. Please, you know, please count us in. And I just never organised that first meeting, so I apologise for that. But I will do it this year. And that might be a good way just to find out what the issues are, what's going on in each country, and then that might help ICEB understand what it should be doing to support the authorities, and how the PR committee might fit into that around the way ICEB might undertake various promotions. So I just wanted to throw that in before we continued with the raised hands. And thank you, Jen, for giving me a task. I appreciate that.
We
Not
have a problem.
Okay.
We have a raised hand from Judy and then from one of the attendees.
Okay.
I think part of the problem is that at its core, what ICEB is responsible for is pretty boring. We develop and maintain the code, and I don't think that the average Braille reader really cares a great deal about the code, and the general public definitely doesn't care about the code. So I think that what I would like to see happen is for the Public Relations Committee to take a very granular look at the whole issue of Braille promotion, correcting misinformation, promoting to blind people, promoting Braille to the general public. I mean, what are we doing? What should we be doing? And then figuring out where on that, I don't know that it's a spectrum, but it's an oddly shaped thing anyway, where on that oddly shaped thing we should be, and how we should focus our, because I don't think we really know how we should focus our promotional efforts.
Yes, I think that's a very good summation of some of the challenges that we have at the moment, and maybe that the PR committee have as well. There's a few.
Okay, we have an attendee, Deborah Thomas, and then Matthew, and then James.
Okay, so
Yeah,
Deborah.
hi. I echo Judy's thoughts there. I quite often go and volunteer in one of our long-term care facilities. Now, some of my thought might be a little bit unrealistic because of the due to the aging process, Braille probably would not be in the best interest. However, how, just putting it out here, how do we encourage people to learn Braille when they're reluctant? I've had conversations with a few people who are experiencing vision loss, and I can tell they have the potential to learn Braille, but they're reluctant because maybe fear, maybe the time, the learning process. And yeah, and that was one of my thoughts. And the other question I had was, I guess I'm being a little silly, but the lady that feeds her ducks in the morning, does she feed them ducks, berries?
Wow.
Well, Leona, I don't know if you lightened the mood anyway. It's good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Why not? It was James, was it?
I can't remember now.
It was Matthew, and then James,
and then Matthew,
I think.
And James, I think, yeah.
And then me.
Okay.
And then Jen.
Okay.
Oh, well, thank you. I would love to hear the answer to Deborah's question, the second one, but actually the first one as well. I think we could talk about how do we motivate people to learn Braille for a long time. We could put that as its own session at the next General Assembly and have a really robust discussion about that. I wanted to come back to the point that Judy made about how Braille code is boring. Thanks very much, Judy. As the code maintenance officer, I shall remember that the work that I'm doing is very boring. But no, on a serious note, I think
my middle of the road treasurer's report in 2020.
Yeah. Middle of the road. Middle of the road is better than boring. But no, seriously, I don't take offence at that at all. I recognise what you're saying. I think for a lot of people, the minutiae of the UEB code is very boring. And I think this is actually a challenge that ICEB needs to rise to. And I think probably the best way we can do that is not by talking about the code, but by talking about the impact of the code. Impact is a bit of a buzzword in the UK and probably in other parts of the world too, in terms of fundraising. They'll say, yeah, how do you measure the impact of your work? And it's developed a bit of a sour taste in people's mouths, but I do think it's relevant. Okay, so we're making some changes to numeric mode. That's really boring. The fact that we've now clarified that you don't have to put superscripts around ordinal indicators. Okay, you've got to explain what an ordinal indicator is. So it's still a bit boring, but it's nowhere near as boring as saying we've updated section 6, because that's something that people can get their head around. Or we've now clarified what type of space you need to use in a postcode. We're kind of getting there. And then if we move on to the more interesting, the next bit of work that the code maintenance committee is doing, which might be more interesting to people. Okay, we're going to start looking at typeforms. All right. If we start telling people we're looking at typeforms, they'd glaze over. If we start asking the question, when your screen reader encounters a spelling error, what would you like your screen reader to do? That all of a sudden generates a lot more interest. And I'm not necessarily saying that that's exactly the question that we should be asking. But and also we need to be very careful about consultation and what do you think of Braille, because otherwise we just get told, oh, well, you should just ditch UEB and go back to the old code. But I think there is a place for having some good, strong messaging around what the code means to people rather than just, oh, yeah, we updated this rule. If we can talk more about what that means for people, I think we might actually generate a bit more interest. And particularly around emojis, there might be the opportunity to do a little bit of consultation around emojis, not necessarily on the code that we come up with, but in terms of what do people need from the code. And I think that could actually stir up some interesting code.
Almost like running a couple of online focus groups, Matthew.
I mean, I don't know what that looks like. I think we need to flesh the idea out. But yes, yeah, certainly in the early days of devising rules for emojis, I don't see the harm in saying, look, we want your feedback. What frustrates you about emojis at the moment? What would you like to be able to read them? Would you like to be able to write them? Do you actually care about them at all, or do you just want them to disappear? And give people the sense that they're, we probably can work out the answer to this already, but give people the sense that they're being involved in the conversation And that may stir up some interest.
Which is probably why I was thinking of focus groups, because I think, you know, you could send out a survey, or you could send out something in the newsletter, and it might be a little more removed. I think if people are, if they're online contributing to a discussion like we're doing now, people feel a bit more built into it or invested in it. And it could also be a way to do some subtle messaging around ICEB and what we are as well.
Yeah,
great suggestion. Thank you. And was it James, Jen, the other hand, Sue? Oh, James, sorry.
James and then Jen.
And then Jen.
Thank you. So 2 points. So yes, Matthew, you're absolutely right there. I do remember the discussions about the apostrophe. And one of the overwhelming comments was, thank you for asking. So if you remember, we did a survey, and I think the UK was the second highest respondent, so it's pretty good success for us. The US was the most respondents, but people commented, thank you for letting us know, thank you for asking about us. So that is a trickle down to the local Braille authorities to get involved, get people involved. If we can have more surveys, for example, emoji is a great candidate. Because, you know, people encounter them all the time, and I love them, hate them. There's lots of opinions. Some people use them, some people don't. Some people don't even understand why people even use them in the first place. That was one point I was going to raise. The other point comes back to Judy. If you look at the ICEB constitution, it is not just about the Braille code. So most of the time we've spent our energies on the Braille code, but the constitution does have quite a lot of stuff. Yeah, but it has quite a lot of other stuff.
Yes, it does.
Which we don't actually do.
Well, maybe we should look at that too.
And maybe, as I'm hearing, James, what you're saying and what Matthew's mentioning as well, maybe there's a bit of work to be done just to sort of streamline the, maybe as committees are working on something or producing something that they want to get feedback on, that you use the PR committee more to do a bit of work for you in doing some communications and getting things out there. You know, I'm not necessarily thinking that it would always be a town hall, but whether we do a survey through a newsletter or we do something else, and maybe that's something we can think about as an executive committee going forward. Jen, I think.
Yeah, I just I do agree with Judy's point on what the PR committee should look at. And James, I agree with you as well. Matthew, I think you've raised some really good points about how we could try to make what we do kind of seem more applicable to everyday life. I think that's a really good approach maybe for us to look at. One thing I wanted to say, when I was treasurer, one of the things on my, I don't know if it was like the finance committee terms of reference, I can't remember. It was one of the roles of the treasurer was to look at things like fundraising. And it makes me, I'm bringing this up because I have a similar view on it as I do for advocacy, where I think we really have to think about how that works. We never really did much in the way of fundraising because, again, there were like different charity related laws in different countries. And I think it's the same thing. Like, I think there's a certain type of advocacy that ICEB can do, but I think there's other things that only people who live in a given country, like only the Braille Authority or other advocacy. Like in Canada, we have a blindness group that's what they do is advocacy. They're really good at it. And so BLC does some, but we kind of leave the advocacy to this other group, and they advocate for Braille and they get us involved and they're a member of BLC. So I guess we just need to think about how that, like what we think that would do. I think maybe we could come up with ways that we could support, help Braille authorities to advocate. I'm not even really sure. But the last thing I wanted to say is just in terms of what's in the Constitution and what more we could be doing, I would love for us to do more things. And if the Constitution, it's been a while since I looked at it, but there is more than the code, although like Judy said, that's primary. My concern would be we have to make sure that we, you know, can do all of the things that we, like, I wouldn't want us to try to do 10 different things and not really do most of them very well. So if we're going to add to what we do, which I think we need to look at that, we just need to make sure that, you know, we have the resources, because again, most of us are volunteers. So.
Yeah, and it goes back to that maybe impact thing as well. If we take something on, what's the impact going to be, and how do we measure that maybe as well? I also just want to say, because I'm conscious of time, we're about 10 minutes left before the session closes, that there may be things people think of after today. You know, do get in touch with the Public Relations Committee, with me, or any member of the committee, any of your country reps, if you have ideas, or if you have suggestions, or you'd like to get involved in something. And the same for the newsletter. I know Jen is always keen to get anything for the newsletter.
Yes.
So do please reach out to us and get in touch. And I will be doing some work with each country around sort of Braille authorities and how we can maybe communicate a little bit better between Braille authorities and ICEB. So watch this space for that. Definitely in the next month or two. Is there any other comments, or is there any other thoughts people had? I think it's been a really interesting discussion over the last hour and a bit. Is there anything else anyone wanted to mention before I draw this to a close and hand back to Judy?
I think that Deborah Thomas has her hand up again, but I'm not sure.
She's waiting for an answer from Leona about her ducks.
Sorry, no more jokes this time. But a few years ago, the Purdy's chocolate companies, you'd get a box of chocolates, they had a label on the box of chocolates. And
they still do it. Was,
they yes. still do it? What yeah. about what about I know at one time you could get bottles of products like shampoo, and there was a Braille.
Oh, I had those too.
Yeah,
I've seen that so a long time.
L'Occitane, French brand.
Sanix.
Yeah, it was. I think
L apostrophe O C C A. Yeah.
And I'm wondering how we can encourage more companies to do something like that. You know, again, I'm just, you know.
The other side of that particular coin, though, is the companies that are doing things that are not Braille.
Yes.
And things, for example, Sony was all proud of themselves because they came up with a symbol set for putting on the sides of their televisions, and they had dots, and the HDMI port was labeled with three dots, except the three dots were not in the shape of a Braille H. And I asked them, I said, why would you do this? And not very many people know Braille. I said, but you've gone from a position of, you know, let's say 10%, because I think that's wrong anyway. We could debate that all day. But, you know, let 50% of all blind people know Braille, whatever number it is. You've gone from 50% of the people know it to nobody knows it. So, you know, you've made up this code that absolutely no one knows. And how is that better? And it was not good.
Well, even that my office chair here, it has Braille on the...
steel case chairs do that. My office chair when I was working had Braille on it. You see the Braille in the oddest places. I've seen Braille on an air conditioner in a taxi cab. Mary Schneckenberg was with me in New York City. I mean, sometimes you just see Braille in the most curious places.
My headset has it on the left and right ear. Like, I can't figure out which way to put my... Anyway, you know, yes, there's things that have Braille that I think, oh, I don't really need that.
That really doesn't need it, yeah.
Should have it.
The consumer organizations in the U.S. have done some promotion of the ideas of companies labeling things in Braille. And I, you know, it's Jen said the word resources a while back, and resources is really important because we've come up with a lot of good ideas in this session. It's really been fabulous, but we are all a very small number of people. And mm-hmm. what I, I think one of the things we can do is to put our efforts toward enabling others to do the things to help us get these things done. You know, how can we help our Braille authorities get people to learn Braille? How can we help our Braille authorities to promote Braille labeling? How can we help the Braille authorities, our member countries, to do things? So I think that's mm-hmm. another direction that we should consider.
Mm-hmm. I see a few more raised hands, and I'm conscious of time. So, Sue, I don't know if you want to.
Let's take two more.
I see two Matthew, more, okay. And I don't see an. Oh, Scott Edwards.
Somebody lowered their hand. Okay.
Okay.
So,
well, let's take Scott since he's not spoken.
Hey, Scott.
Scott, you need to unmute.
Yeah, here I am. There seems to be. And this goes back to general public attitudes about blindness, and I think the among them in the public eye is that Braille is dying. So that's what needs to change. I mean, we need to put more attention in the public eye that Braille is still thriving.
It's not just the public. We have people in our own community saying that.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That too, but you know. But overall, I mean, it's like it stems from the general public attitudes, I think, about blindness in general.
Also, yes, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Right.
Thanks,
Matthew. Scott. Matthew, you have it. Your hand is raised.
Thank you. It was just a thought that came out of that conversation about can we do something to recognize or to encourage people to put Braille on their products. I don't have time to talk about it now, but I wonder if there's something we can do around ICEB recognizing products or recognizing uses of Braille, whether or not we could do some sort of award or something, and it can be as small scale as you like, but something that says we give this award to this organization for including Braille and all the Braille is correct, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then we just maintain a running list on the ICEB website and hope that they'll give us some publicity in return, you know, display our logo
and
stuff like that.
That's a fabulous idea. Awards are a great way to get promotion for us, get goodwill all around and get people's interest. So
yeah,
I think
that's a great idea.
We started that in Vanna some years ago, and it's been really a good thing. So yeah, I like that idea. All right. Okay. Well, we are coming to an end. I thank you, Stuart, for do you have any last comments you'd like to make, Stuart?
No, just want to thank everybody for some really great discussion, great ideas. Thanks, everybody, for being so open. And thank you, Judy. Hand it back to you.
All right. Thank you very much. So tomorrow's our final day. We will wrap this up. And it's been great to have so many people here. And I look forward to seeing everyone tomorrow. So thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.